Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
So, welcome to Claire. Great to see you again, Claire.
Morning. Oh, hello.
Hi. So, great to see you, Claire. You're with Cambridge Networks, and I met up with you at the MOVE conference just a few weeks back when we were talking about electric and autonomous vehicles and all of that. And I thought it'd be great to have you on our video and podcast to talk about some of those areas you're working in Cambridge. So great to have you here.
Thanks, Andrew. And hello. So I'm Claire Ruskin, as you know. I've got over 30 years of technical and business design experience, including for some of the 23 Cambridge companies that have gone from startup now to values over $1 billion. So we're pretty proud of those. And I've moved on to lead Cambridge Network for a while, which brings high skill businesses together, specifically to share some of the things that other companies do so that we learn from each other. So we're building on the shoulders of giants rather than starting to reinvent the wheel each time. And what I do now is I'm a business member of the Greater Cambridge Partnership, which aims to unblock the potential for Cambridgeshire to continue making a huge positive impact on the world. As you know, some of the companies here are making a real difference around the world. So Arm for computer chips, AstraZeneca for vaccines and drugs and everything else, and a huge number of companies in between. So printing is a big issue here that we've solved. All sorts of things that Cambridge has been leading in. Artificial intelligence is a particular strong point these days. So what I really like to do is get collaboration going and get people and things working at their best. So all sorts of things that we can do. What we're particularly trying to do now is building across the gaps that we normally have between the local authorities, public sector, businesses, the academics, and the residents in any location.
So you're a membership organisation, is that the best way of putting it?
Cambridge Network is absolutely a membership organisation, and we've got something like 1,500 businesses participating to share lessons and resources.
Good. And I'm very familiar with sort of Cambridge Angel Network, which is doing investment in that space, and friends with Simon Thorpe and yep. Peter Cowley, who I've done previous sessions and that with. So do you work with them, or how does that sort of interaction work in terms of investing in startups?
Yeah, so Cambridge is a delightfully small place, and that's one of the things that makes it really easy to be a crucible of all this energy and vibrancy of innovation. So people like Peter and Simon are very active entrepreneurs in their own right, and then going back into the academic world and the angel investing world to bring all these things together so that we've really got people who don't just make a fortune and then go off and buy a yacht or a golf club. They actually stay around in Cambridge and help the next generation come up and through. And that's one of the great things about it. You can walk across Cambridge and you always bump into people that you know and who will help you with the next puzzle you're trying to solve.
Yeah. Well, I had the pleasure and the honour of studying my undergrad in Cambridge. So I know it sort of from that sort of side of it, and also the pleasure of working with sort of entrepreneurs and startups and that now. So this ecosystem of great minds, but how do you transfer that into business, and how do you transfer those into new technology ideas, which are going to be quite radical? That's sort of where, you know, Cambridge and other centres have been working on, isn't it?
It's very good at that. And in particular, we just have people chatting about business and ideas a lot of the time. So we don't talk about golf. We do talk about business and innovation and science, and get all very interested in that.
Good.
And Cambridge is really small. So it's only got a population of about 125,000 people in the city. So it's one of the smallest of the UK cities. But it has something like 100,000 people coming in every morning and going out every evening. So that's one of the issues that the Greater Cambridge Partnership is trying to solve, is to solve the twice-a-day congestion and occasional gridlock, in fact, quite frequent gridlock. Anything goes wrong on the road network and just the whole city grinds to a halt, which is fine for those of us who live and work in the centre and can cycle or walk, which many people do here.
Yeah.
But many, many people actually come in from much further afield. So students, people coming to the sixth form colleges, people who are working in the city or the necklace of sites around come from much further afield. They can't cycle in that distance. So we need to find a way of decongesting Cambridge so that they can get in reliably, reasonably quickly, and more cheaply than coming in by car, if possible.
Yeah. So that's the practical stuff that's happening there now. And when I was a student, as you said, for locals, you just nip on your bicycle, which really should be the best option than that, even if we've got electric vehicles and stuff like that. But looking to the future, as I say, we were at the MOVE conference and we were talking about autonomous vehicles sort of initiatives and sort of stuff like that. So thinking to, autonomous sort of level 5, when these vehicles have got no drivers and they can go off and do their own thing and their own routes. So give us a bit of background about what Cambridge is doing in putting that sort of infrastructure and that in place and using the technology and brains that you've got there in Cambridge.
So first of all, we've used the brains to find the evidence and the data of what we need. So we think we need to double the public transport capacity and availability in the next decade, as well as working to zero carbon, which is obviously what we're very keen on doing. So doubling public transport is easy to put more buses on the streets. But if you've still got private cars blocking the streets, they are only a certain width. They're not going to get any wider. We're not going to drive down King's Parade and put a bulldozer through any of the buildings along there. So how do we get reliably running public transport, which adds to the people being able to drive in? So we have to reduce the parking availability in the centre of Cambridge. Unfortunately, we have to unblock people from just coming in and cruising around looking for a place to park. That doesn't work very well at all. And we have to give people a motivation to actually get to the outskirts of Cambridge and then jump on some form of public transport. So the only way we really think this will work is to get as many segregated busways as we can so that we can get some express travel in. Now, we would have loved to have put invisible tunnels in, because tunnels everybody agrees with, because they don't affect anybody's front garden.
Yeah.
And nobody has anything to complain about. They just assume a tunnel will be invisible. However, the cost is prohibitive. So because we are a small city, if you divide the cost of the tunnels by the number of people who will be using the vehicles, it's not the same as London or Manchester. So segregated busways, great. Put cycleways alongside them so that those who are fit enough to travel in longer distances can come alongside. But buses cost something like 100k a year to run, and about half of that is the cost of the driver.
Right.
So in order to extend the usable hours, out-of-hour services and shorter distances that are just trundling back and forth, perhaps between the centre of town or a station and one of the big employment centres, autonomy comes into its own quite quickly. So we've been running some trials this summer, obviously reasonably difficult with lockdown and COVID slowing things down, but running some trials that were very successful. So we had 3 shuttles built by a company called Arrigo, because they had some technology that looked good and does look good, for 12 people each. They can be fully autonomous, but we've had safety drivers sitting in for the trials. We've monitored a load of data. We've picked up 30 terabytes of data, I think, of every journey that was made. And we've had a lot of feedback from the people who use them, which was hugely positive. So 97% of the people who use the trial shuttles would absolutely step on them again and use them very happily.
Right.
And they were interesting because we put them into mixed traffic. So we put the shuttle buses with a safety driver on board in through part of the park and ride site that we have just on the outskirts of Cambridge, onto the main road, across that main road into one of the university sites, so that we could drive around a mixed site which has a lot of cyclists, a lot of pedestrians, the old nursery school, children running around.
Right.
And it went very, very well. So obviously there was no risk anyway because of the safety drivers on there.
Yeah.
But the autonomous trial went extremely well.
So how soon do you think you'll be able to remove the driver? What's the impediments to being able to remove that sort of safety driver?
Mostly people issues at the moment. So I think the technology for, particularly if we just put the buses on a segregated pathway,
right,
then we would be very confident. I think the people issues of having them around people who will be having fun trying to throw a stone in front of it or trying to park their bike in front of it, right, will always be an issue for a little while yet. But we would be keen to deploy them quickly between park and rides and some of the big science parks campuses. The biomedical campus is growing hugely. Most of the necklace of sites around Cambridge are doubling in size, in employment size.
Right.
We've got a new hospital being built on the biomedical campus. And just being able to ship people from a place they can park into the centre of the hospital would be a huge benefit. But inevitably, it's going to be a few years before we've got the segregated ways built, secured, and the technology for the buses in place to have multiple vehicles, even if they just extend the hours, because obviously a hospital is 24/7. Many of the laboratories that people are working in are 24/7.
Right.
And putting these vehicles in to extend normal hours, having drivers during the daytime, and then autonomous vehicles on demand, potentially in the evenings and night times.
Right, okay, great, great. So stepping back a little bit, I suppose, in terms of, you know, you've seen the application of technology from all the stuff you did done within Cambridge for some years. How do you see the application of technology affecting sort of business models and sort of societies? You know, everything from, you know, the personal computers that were, you know, developed and that, and, you know, the BBC computers and the, that was partly behind the, you know, the ARM and the founders and that there, how that's changed things. Yeah. And now how you're seeing electric vehicles, just even ordinary electric vehicles. I've seen it over my sort of time. You know, I've took executives to see Tesla in 2008 and saying to the executives then, well, look, this is not just about a different powertrain. This is going to change the energy infrastructure. It's going to be distributed energy. We're going to have to change the way we think about the whole sort of value chain. What sort of insights would you have around that, Claire, in terms of autonomous vehicles or something like the other areas you've seen within Cambridge?
Well, you mentioned Tesla. I was over when the ground was bare in China for the Tesla factory that's now allegedly turning out 1 million vehicles a year.
Yeah.
And I saw it when it was bare earth. I saw the factory go up.
That was just 2019, wasn't it? I think they broke the ground at the beginning of 2019. And by the time I left there at the end of 2019, when I was over there for doing some other stuff,
within a year, they were just building these vehicles. They still have rare earth metals. They still have a lot of valuable components in them. So the batteries. So in Cambridge, we're working quite hard on batteries that use different materials and are much more quickly rechargeable, more efficient overall. So the technology of the components, we've also got the AI components, so the higher level applications, if you like, for autonomous vehicles being developed here. So they will become lower cost and lower carbon footprint very quickly, I think. Yep. So with all the work that's going into them. One of the real issues we've got in Cambridge and in many cities around the UK, probably the rest of the world as well, is we are running out of electricity capacity.
Yeah.
So actually the Greater Cambridge Partnership is needing to pay up front for electricity substations in order to generate more local electricity. We cannot do electrification of transport without putting in some of the infrastructure that you would have thought the UK would have had, but it doesn't happen and can't get it.
Yeah.
So those sorts of developments are actually very basic, just trying to get enough electricity to light workplaces.
I think you're right. There's partly about infrastructure and there's partly about planning and demand management as well. So at that time, so when I was in China, we in 2019, we visited in Shenzhen, which has got 25,000 electric taxis in just that one city.
Yeah.
And we visited one car park, one of a few car parks they had, where they had 100 kilowatt chargers. So there's a pretty big thick copper wire that needs to go into there to be able to put that in. But I think the other challenge we've got in cities like Cambridge is, people don't have drives, in the centre of the town. So where are you going to put those extensions, sort of type things? And for most people, domestic cars, they're sitting in the drive for 95% of the time. So you don't need a big power sort of thing. But it's for those other use cases, for your autonomous vehicles, if they're going to be used 24/7, then how do you make sure they keep charged on their route and not have to go off for an hour and sort of things like that? That's a big planning and tech issue. It's not just about generating energy, isn't it?
And we have to look at it in the round. So I'm very much for holistic assessment of these things. You don't have to have the buses now. It can be very, very clean. They don't have to be electric. We do want them to be electric. We want the trains. If East-West Rail comes in, we definitely want that to be electric, not diesel. But actually, you can do a huge amount now with clean technology anyway, before you get to full electric. The infrastructure is not there yet. It will be, but it's a lot of these manual running copper wires. We're going to run out of copper. It's just a different part of the equation where we have to spend an energy budget there.
And I think going back to what Cambridge Network does, I think the thing is going to be important is how do we coordinate this stuff? Because even if you've got the technology, in my little town, I sort of speak to the town council and say, look, this is just crazy. We don't have a bus stop at the train station. We don't have car shares so that we can just quickly pick up a car or pick up a bike or something like that at the train station. Why don't we coordinate and link these things up? So, as you're saying, this is much about the network than it is about the tech or putting infrastructure around.
It really is. We've got many of these things. So in Cambridgeshire, we've got some trials of electric scooters and electric bikes. I've invested in an electric bike, but it was as expensive as a small secondhand car. And I bought a relatively inexpensive one. If we can get those at the station so that people will comfortably get to the station, that we all become accustomed to wearing clumpy shoes rather than the high heels and little suits that we used to wear. It's practical things. I turned up at a big cocktail party effectively last night, and I'd walked in, so I was wearing my big clumpy shoes. It's not as nice as going in, trotting in your little shoes, but we've got to get used to some of these things that are just different. They're not technology, they are people, and people getting used to working in slightly different ways. Congestion can be affected by people taking different time of route as much as different routes or different technology. And so should we get the secondary schools to work from 10 o'clock to 7 o'clock? Because teenagers learn better at that time of day anyway.
Right, yeah.
All these little things we can do is what the Greater Cambridge Partnership is trying to think about, trying to get the skills so that more local people can come in for the jobs that we've got, rather than requiring lab technicians to come in from London or Stevenage. And just many of these things are complementary to each other. They're not about technology, they're just about thinking carefully.
Claire, that's a great way, I think, to wrap up the overall introduction to yourself and Cambridge Network and talking about some specific challenges you're dealing with there. Thanks very much for sharing your insights today.
Well, I'm glad we met at MOVE, and I look forward to meeting you again, Andrew. It's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please do subscribe for future podcasts. Thank you.